here I am, my dear internet, with a bang to read to you, or maybe just fleetingly, who knows. However, I do know that if I go on about today's selection any longer, I'm just going to spend the whole hour elegizing, and none of us want that, believe you me. Do know, however, that you, members of the internet, have done a fine job elegizing on today's author, and so I encourage you to go on a hunting peck of your own. You never know what you might find. Or don't, if you're not the curious sort, I don't really care. Hello, it's Wednesday the 31st of January 2007, and it's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast. The Haile Selassie Funeral Train by Guy Davenport. The Haile Selassie Funeral Train pulled out of Deauville at 1500 hours sharp. So slowly that we glided in silence past the platform, on which gentlemen in Prince Albert's stood mute under their umbrellas, ladies in picture hats held handkerchiefs to their mouths, and porters in blue smocks stood at attention. A brass band played Stanford in A. We picked up speed at the gasworks, and the conductor and the guards began to work their way down the car, punching tickets and looking at passports. Most of us sat with our hands folded in our laps. I thought of the cool fig trees of Addis Ababa, and of the policemen with white spats painted on their bare feet, of the belled camel that had brought the sunburnt and turbaned Rambo across the Danakil. We passed neat farms and pigsties, olive groves and vineyards. Once the conductor and guards were in the next car, we began to make ourselves comfortable, and to talk. "I slept with his eyes open for 40 years, a woman behind me said to her companion, who replied that it runs in the family.
"But the Jews,"
a fat man said to the car at large. Years later, when I was telling James Johnson Sweeney of this solemn ride on the Haile Selassie funeral train, he was astonished that I had been aboard.
"My God, what a train!" he exclaimed. "What a time! It is incredible now to remember the people who were on that train. James Joyce was there, I was there, ambassadors, professors from the Sorbonne and Oxford, at least one Chinese field marshal, and the entire staff of La Prensa."
James Joyce, and I had not seen him? The world in 1936 was quite different from what it is now. I know that Apollinaire was on board. I had seen him in his crumpled lieutenant's uniform, his head wrapped in a gauze bandage, his small croix de guerre caught under his Sam Brown belt. He sat bolt upright, his wide hands on his knees, his chin lifted and proud. A bearded little man in pince-nez must have seen with what awe I was watching Apollinaire, for he got out of his seat and came and put his hand on my arm. "Don't go near that man," he said softly in my ear. "He says that he is the Kaiser." The compassion I felt for the wounded poet seemed to be reflected in the somber little farms we passed. We saw cows goaded home from the pasture, gypsies squatting around their evening fire, soldiers marching behind a flag, and a drummer with his mouth open. Once we heard a melody played on a harmonica, but could only see the great wheel of a colliery. Apollinaire could look so German from time to time, when you could see the pickelhaube on his bandaged head, the swallow-wing moustache, the glint of disciplinary idiocy in his sweet eyes. He was Guillaume, Wilhelm. Farms deteriorate. Transformation is not always growth.
There is a hostage light and shadows, Vagram shadow in desert noon, burgundy in the green of a vine, green in the reddest wine. We passed a city that, like Richmond, had chinaberry trees in the yards of wooden houses hung with wisteria at the eaves, women with shears and baskets standing in the yards. I saw a girl with a lamp standing at a window, an old negro shuffling to the music of a banjo, a mule wearing a straw hat. Joyce sat at a kitchen table in the first compartment to the right, a dingy room as you entered the fourth wagon lit counting from the locomotive and tender. His eyes, enlarged by his glasses, seemed to be goldfish swimming back and forth in a globe. There was a sink behind him, a bit of soap by the faucet, a window with lace half-curtains yellowed with the years. Tacked to the green tongue and groove walls was a sacred heart in mauve, rose and gilt. A postcard photograph of a bathing beauty of the 80s, one hand on the bun of her hair, the other with fingers spread level with her dimpled knee, and a neatly clipped newspaper headline. "A united Ireland, and Trieste belongs to Italy," says Mayor Curley at Fete. He was talking about Orpheus preaching to the animals. "The wild harp had chimed," I heard him say, "and the elk had come with regal tread, superb under the tree of his antlers, a druid look in his eye." He described Orpheus on a red cow of the Ashanti, Eurydice beneath him, underground, making her way through the roots of trees. Apollinaire stuffed shag into a small clay pipe and lit it with an Italian match from a scarlet box bearing in an oval wreathed with scrolled olive and wheat and a portrait of King Umberto. He tapped his knee as he smoked. He battered his eyes. King Umberto looked like Velasquez's Ray Philippe. "My wife," Joyce says, "keeps looking for Galway in Paris. We move every 6 weeks." There came to Orpheus a red mouse with her brood chewing a leaf of thorax, a yawning leopard, a pair of coyotes walking on their toes. Joyce's fingers were crowded with rings. The blob of magnified eyes sloshed in its lens. He spoke of the city turning alder leaves the whole of a night on the ground until they all faced downward towards China. Of creation, he said, we had no idea because of the fineness of the stitch. The ear of a flea, scales on the wing of a moth, peripheral nerves of the sea hare, great God, beside the anatomy of a grasshopper, shard is a kind of mud pie, and the grand pictures in their frames in the Louvre, the tracks of a hen. Our train was going down the boulevard Montparnasse, which was in Barcelona. "How a woman beats a batter for a cake," Joyce was saying, "is how the king's horses, whitened from Galway, champing in their foam and thundering against rock like the January Atlantic, maul the sward, the dust, the sty, the garden. Energy is in the race, handed down from cave to public house. Isbin kept a mirror in his hat to comb his mane by. Yon horse Earl eyed his blue tooth in a glass he'd given the pelts of 40 squills, for in Byzantium, glory to Freya." Apollinaire was showing his passport to a guard who had come by the conductor. They whispered head to head, the conductor and the guard. Apollinaire took his hat from the rack and put it on. It sat high on the bandage. "Je ne suis pas Balzac," he said. We passed the yellow roofs and red warehouses of Brindisium. Ni Michel Larionov.
"Well, fish," Joyce was saying, "listen from the seas, porpoises, frilly jellyfish, walruses, whelks and barnacles. Owl listens from the olive, ringdove from the apple, and to all he says, 'Il n'y a que l'homme qui est immonde.'" Somewhere on the train lay the Lion of Judah, Ras Tafari, the son of Ras Makunin. His spearmen had charged the armoured cars of the Italian Corpo d'Armata Africano, leaping and baring their teeth. His leopards had a car to themselves. When we rounded a long curve, I could see that our locomotive bore the imperial standard of Ethiopia, a crowned lion bearing a bannered cross within a pentad of Megan David's on the three stripes, green, yellow, and red. There was writing on it in Coptic. We passed the ravage and eroded hills of the Dalmatian coast, combed with gullies like stains on an ancient wall. There was none of us who looked at the desolation of these hills without thinking of the wastes of the Danakil, the red rock valleys of Edom, the black sand marches of Beni Tamir. From time to time we could hear from the car that bore Haile Selassie the long notes of some primitive horn and the hard clang of a bell. Moths quivered on the dusty plains. Mamestris, Eucalypteris, Antiblemis. And oh, the gardens we could see beyond walls and fences. Outside Barcelona, as in a dream, we saw La Belle Jardinière herself, with her doves and wasps, her sure signs in full view among the flowers, her bennu tail on its blue legs, her crown of butterflies, her buckle of red jasper, her lovely hair. She was busy beside a sycamore, pulling water out in threads. "Rouvavin," Apollinaire said quite clearly, as if to the car at large. It was there that La Laurencin set out for Spain with a bird in her hat, an ear of wheat in her teeth. As her train pulled out of the Gare Saint-Lazare, taking her and Otto van Wetgen to the shorescapes of Boudin at Deauville, where we all boarded this train, where we were all of us near the umbrellas of Proust, the great war began. They burnt the library at Louvain. What in the name of God could humanity be if man is an example of it? Deftly she drew the crystal water from the sycamore, deftly. Her helper, perhaps her lord, wore a mantle of leaves and a mask that made his head that of Thoth, beaked with fixed and painted eyes. We were in Genoa, on tracks that belonged to trolleys. Walls as long and fortress-like as those of Peking were stuck all over up to a height with posters depicting corsets, Cinzano, Mussolini, shoe-wax, the fascist axe, boys and girls marching to Giovinezza, Giovinezza. Trees showed their topmost branches above these long grey walls, and many of us must have tried to imagine the secluded gardens with statues and belvederes which they enclosed. He lay with his hands folded over the sword, the conquering lion, somewhere on the train. Four spearmen in scarlet capes stood barefoot around him, two at his head, two at his feet. A priest in a golden hat read constantly from a book. If only one could hear the words they described, Saba on an ivory chair, on cushions deep as a bath, a woman with a bright mind and red blood. They described Suleiman in his cedar house beyond the stone desert it takes 40 years to cross. The priest's words were as bees in an orchard, as bells in a holy city. He read aloud in a melodious drone of saints, dragons, underworlds, forests with eyes in every leaf. Mariam, Italian airplanes. "An unweeded garden," Joyce was saying, "is all an inspired poet rode rick-rack the river to usher us in. Her wick is all ears, the lady in the garden. There is an adder in the girl of her eye, dew on the lashes and an apple in the mirror of the dew. Does anybody in this buggering train know the name of the engineer?" "King's Counsel Jones," cried James Johnson Sweeney. He had pushed his way between federales of the Guardia Civil, Ethiopian infantrymen in tunics and pith helmets, quilted sergeants of the Kuomintang. I thought of the engineer Elrod Singbell, who used to take the mile-long descending curve of Stump House Mountain in the Blue Ridge, playing Amazing Grace on the whistle. I remembered the sharp, sweet perfume of chinaberry blossoms in the earliest spring. Joyce spoke of an Orpheus in yellow dancing through bamboo, followed by cheetahs, macaws, canaries, tigers, and an Orpheus in the canyons at the bottom of the sea, leading a gelatin of hydras, feel-foot starfish, six-eyed medusas, feather-boed sea lilies, comb-jelly cydippias, scarlet crabs, and gleaming mackerel as old as the moon. "Noé," Apollinaire said in a brown study. "Mice, whisker to whisker," Joyce said, "white-shanked quaggas trotting presto presto e delicatamente, cackling pullets, crave hogs, whistling tapirs. La belle jardinière, we saw her selling flowers in Madrid, corn marigolds, holy thistles, great silver knapweed, and white wild campions. In Odessa she pranced in a turn of sparrows. She was in the azaleas when we went through Atlanta, shaking fire from her wrists." "Would that be the Castellum?" Joyce said. "Where the Graf put his twin sons together with a commentary on the Babylonian Talmud in a kirk dark as the car of Osiris, until a certain lady in jackboots and eye patch found a way to them by light. Being a squally night, she had put the pea in the cove above Engelnacker and kidnapped them tweeling as they were sweetening Jonathan and Dawith, a sugar-plum's midge, from Luther into the wind and stars, but not before twisting her heel by the doorpost and wetting the premises." "Shepherds!" Apollinaire cried to the car, startling us all. "We had no shepherds at Ypres. We have no shepherds now." We were crossing the gardens of Normandy, coming back to Deauville. Somewhere on the train, behind us, before us, Haile Selassie lay on his bier, his open eyes looking up through the roof of his imperial car to the double star Gamma in Triangulum, twin suns, the one orange, the other green.